This morning is now the sixth Sunday in the season of Lent. And for those of you who don't know, we in the Church of God have not done Lent for a long time. This is a fairly new thing for us. So if it's new to you as well, let me assure you that I'm not speaking about anything that has to do with your belly button or the stuff that comes out of your dryer. Lent is the name of this season, of these weeks leading up to Resurrection Sunday, next Sunday morning. And during the season of Lent, the church slows down and walks slowly with Jesus toward the cross. We are aware of the movement of Jesus toward Friday. This is the sixth Sunday in the season of Lent. This is also the sixth Sunday that we've been reading from Paul's letter to the Galatians. This is the sixth Sunday when we've been listening to this letter written, this ancient letter written by the Apostle Paul, in which the theme of the cross of Jesus is so central and therefore so appropriate to the season of Lent. This is the sixth Sunday that we've been reading from Galatians. This is the sixth Sunday that we have been looking in on the Apostle Paul in what might be the most frustrating time of his ministry, maybe. The sixth Sunday that we've been looking in at Paul as his forehead is furrowed with frustration, as his face is flush red with disappointment, as Paul is as angry perhaps as we've ever seen him in any of his letters. This ancient apostle to the church, this one whom Jesus called to carry the good news of Christ to the Gentiles, to the non-Jewish community. We're looking in on Paul this morning once again for the sixth Sunday in a row when he is as frustrated as Paul has ever been, perhaps. We've heard language in Galatians that we are not used to hearing from letters of the Bible. In the very opening chapter, when Paul was supposed to give thanksgiving for the church, instead he said, "I am astonished that you are so quickly deserting him who called you according to the grace of Christ." Hard words in a part of the letter where he was supposed to be saying thanks. In a part of the letter when Paul would very often speak about his relationship with the church and the joy that he had in that relationship, in this letter instead, Paul finds himself having to defend his authority as an apostle. We've listened as Paul has said, "Friends, what I have to say to you, I did not receive from human hands. I'm delivering to you what I received by revelation of Jesus Christ." We've heard Paul use language in Galatians that is fiery hot. "Oh, you foolish Galatians, who has bewitched you before whom Jesus was clearly portrayed as crucified?" Tough language. This is the sixth Sunday in which we've been listening to Paul and his concerned words to the Galatians. This is also the sixth Sunday in which we've been thinking about Paul's opponents, the sixth Sunday in a row. When I've asked you to think about those people who came into Galatia after Paul had gone there and preached the gospel to these Gentiles, these non-Jewish people, and they had been converted, they'd become new followers of Jesus, Paul found it necessary to go to another place, and these preachers came in, Paul's opponents, these Jewish Christian preachers. This sixth Sunday in a row that I've told you, their message, they had said something to the Galatians like this. They had said, "We're delighted that you have received Jesus as Lord, but if you really want to be part of God's people, if you really, really want to be part of God's people, you need to remember that God's chosen people are the descendants of Abraham. They are the Jewish nation. And if you really, really want to be part of God's people, if you want to belong, you need to become like us. You need to become more Jewish. You need to follow the ritual commandments related to the Sabbath, and you need to sync your calendars with the Jewish calendar so that you are celebrating all of the feasts of the Jews, and all of the men among you need to be circumcised in order to be showing that you are like us, that you are part of God's people. This is what you need to do in order to be among us, to really, really, really belong." Now, this is the sixth Sunday in a row that I've told you about the message of Paul's opponents and Paul's irritation at what is going on here. And I belabor this morning that it has been six Sundays because the truth is that for us who are gathered here this morning, it has been six or 60 or 60,000 that we have heard a very similar message to the one that Paul's opponents were preaching. In fact, we may have unintentionally helped to share it, this message that says, if you really, really, really want to be part of God's people, you have to clean up your act a little bit first in order to really, really, really belong. This is what religion has been doing since the beginning of time. Clear back in the day of Jesus, one of the wonders of the world in the day of Jesus was the Temple of Herod. This was the temple in Jerusalem that we've read about so many times. This is one of the great wonders of the world was when King Herod, some years before Jesus, had rebuilt the temple with the help of the Romans. And it was one of the wonders of the ancient world. People traveled from all over the world to come see the temple in Jerusalem, Herod's temple. It was an architectural beauty that confirmed that what religion has been doing from the beginning of time is religion has been communicating that if you really, really, really want to be part of God's people, first of all, you've got to clean up your act, and then you can be part. There was an enormous wall that went around the outside of the temple, great, big, beautiful wall, and there were some gates that went into this wall, and the only way that you could enter into the temple courts was through these approved gates, and when you entered into these approved gates, you were now in the court of the Gentiles. If you were non-Jewish, this was the only part of the temple that you were allowed to come into. Roman soldiers could walk into here. People visiting from Asia could walk in, and they could walk around the court of the Gentiles. This was the outermost court, and then inside of that court was a court that was called the Court of the Women. And it really should have been called the Court of the Ritually Pure Jewish Women. Because you could enter into this second court if you were a ritually pure Jewish woman. Meaning, I don't mean to be crude, but you couldn't be menstruating. You couldn't have had sex too recently. There were all kinds of requirements that were placed on women who were allowed to enter into the second court of the temple, the court for the ritually pure Jewish women. Now, inside of this court, there was something called the Court of Israel, which really should have been called the Court of the Ritually Pure Jewish Men, because women couldn't go into this court. Only the men who were Jewish, who were ritually pure, were allowed to go inside this court. By the way, that meant if you were a leper, you couldn't go inside this court. If you were mentally ill, you couldn't go inside this court. If you had sinned recently, you were not allowed to go inside this court. This was the court for the ritually pure Jewish men. Inside of this court, there was the court for the priests, the Levites. They were allowed to go, of course, if they were ritually pure. And inside of that, there was a court where only one person could go one day a year. It was called the Holy of Holies, where only the chief priest was allowed to go one time a year. This was the temple in Jerusalem at the time of Jesus and at the time of Paul, a temple that speaks of the way religion has focused forever. You forgive me for this. Some of you have heard me tell this before. There's a story about two people who were out grocery shopping one day, a lady who was further toward the front of the line and a man who was standing right behind her, both of them with their grocery shopping carts. He happened to notice that she had written her shopping list on the back of a bulletin from church that she had laid in the top of the grocery cart. He said to her, excuse me, ma'am, I can't help but noticing that there's a bulletin from church in the top of your grocery cart. What a coincidence. I happen to go to church too. What church are you a part of? This woman said, well, I'm a part of the Church of God. He said, what a coincidence. I'm a part of the Church of God too. Are you a part of the Church of God with general offices in Cleveland, Tennessee, or with general offices in Anderson, Indiana? She said, well, I'm a part of the Church of God with general offices in Anderson, Indiana. He said, well, what a coincidence. So am I. Are you a part of the Church of God with general offices in Anderson, Indiana that sings hymns or that sings choruses or that does a blended form of worship? She said, well, I guess I'd have to describe it as blended. He said, what a coincidence. I'm a part of the Church of God with general offices in Anderson, Indiana that does blended worship too. Which version of the Bible do you read from? She said, well, in our church, we read from Today's New International Version. He said, we read from the New International Version. Die, you heretic. We have our courts. We have our little courts that say, if you really, really, really want to be part of God's people, first you have to clean up your thinking and think right. You've got to get your theology right. You've got to understand the Trinity. You've got to understand the divinity of Jesus. You've got to have it all figured out, and then you're welcome to be part of God's people. See, this is what religion has done from the beginning of time. Inside the court of agreeing with our doctrine and our teaching, there is another court. It's the court of looking the part. It's a subtle one. I don't know anybody that does this on purpose. This is a true story. There is a man who was invited to be the guest speaker of a church in New York City, an old famous congregation in New York City. Their pastor had invited him to be the guest speaker this particular day, and so he went to church dressed as he normally did, dress slacks, dress shirt, cardigan. He walked into this church, and first thing he noticed was that no one said a thing to him. Early Sunday morning, he walked around a little while, no one spoke a single word to him. He noticed everybody was dressed in their three-piece suits and their long, beautiful dresses, and after a little while, he saw a lady that was wearing a name tag. She looked kind of official, and so he walked over to her, and he said, excuse me, can you tell me where I'm supposed to be? And she looked at the way he was dressed, and she said, I think, sir, that you're looking for a different church. There is a court in our religious circles, a little inner court, that looks upon people based upon how they look, how they act, what they're wearing, and you can't get beyond that in most churches if you're wearing the wrong stuff. But the hardest one, the court more toward the middle, the one that you've really got to get right if you want to belong to God's people, this at least is the way religion has functioned for years, is the court of conduct. You've got to clean up the outside of the cup if you want to be part of God's people. When I came to Alma a little over 12 years ago, one of the fringe benefits of getting to be the pastor here was our His Place building. I get to go over to His Place at lunchtime and change clothes and go for a little run, and I can come back and take a shower. Everyone thanks God that I take a shower and go back to my work. It's a wonderful little fringe benefit of being your pastor. And another fringe benefit of that is that for 12 years, I have taken little runs that start from His Place and go out in every direction through Alma. I think I've run in every conceivable direction from His Place to various parts of our little town. And on those little runs that I do, I've gotten pretty acquainted with our neighborhood. And I've run past apartments and houses and neighborhoods. And one of the things that I've noticed, especially this time of year when the weather starts to warm up and people start coming down out of their houses, I've noticed right here in the neighborhood of our church, there are a lot of folks who aren't very churchy, if you know what I mean. I'll run by an apartment complex, and I'll notice that some folks have come out of their apartment complex, and they're using language with one another that's salted with some pretty powerful metaphors, if you know what I'm saying. And they're not at all reluctant to use them publicly. I'll notice that as I'm running by. I'll notice some parents who appear as though they've never had good models in parenting any time in their lives as they scream at their children, thinking that somehow screaming at children works. It never has. It never will. But they just keep screaming at their children and screaming and screaming. And it's behavior that you'd never see in a church. And I see folks sitting out and having conversations that aren't too appropriate in churchy kinds of settings. And every once in a while as I'm running by, I'll have this thought. I wonder if these people would be welcome in God's family. I wonder, would they be welcome, or would they first think that they have to clean up their act in order to be among God's people? For six Sundays now, we have been listening to the Apostle Paul. We've been watching the Apostle Paul, red in the face, Apostle Paul. For 6 weeks in a row, we have been hearing Paul say, "You are made right with God because of what Jesus Christ has done for you, and by entrusting yourself to what Jesus has done for you. You are made right with God because of that." For 6 weeks in a row, we've been hearing Paul say to these Gentiles, these non-Jewish people, "You are God's people because of what Jesus Christ has done for you and for no other reason. You don't have to clean up your act first. You don't have to be Jewish. You don't have to be circumcised. For 6 weeks in a row, we've been hearing Paul say, you are God's people because you have entrusted yourself to what God has done for you. For 6 Sundays in a row. And once again this morning, we hear Paul saying the same message in different words. Listen to what he said to these Galatians 2,000 years ago. You are the children of God through faith in Christ Jesus. You don't have to get it right first. You don't have to clean up the outside of the cup first. You are God's children because you've entrusted what God has done for you in Jesus. Wait till you hear what comes next. All of you who were baptized into Christ have clothed yourself with Christ. Paul is speaking now about when he was with them and had first preached the gospel to them, and they had believed in Jesus as a sign of their trust in Jesus, as an outward expression of that. Many of these Gentiles had been baptized now. They'd gone down in the water and they'd come up out of the water, and as they came up out of the water, it is as though they had to look through all of their closets to see what they should wear, and they went through all of their clothes. What should I wear now that I've been baptized and I'm a follower of Jesus? This suit won't work. This one won't do. Ah! I'll wear Christ. That's why I was baptized. I'll put on Christ from this time forward. Paul is reminding the Galatian Christians that when they were baptized, when they believed in Jesus, when they expressed that through baptism, they came out wearing Christ. They belong in God's church and God's family as much as Jesus does. If you think that's something, wait till you hear what comes next. There is neither Jew nor Greek. You remember that outer court? It doesn't exist any longer. There is no Jew nor Gentile. There are no men or women any longer. There are no longer slaves and freemen. All are one through Jesus Christ. All of those distinctions have been wiped away because in God's family, you are welcome when you entrust yourself to the grace of God through Jesus Christ. You remember that day when a Roman centurion came up to Jesus? This is a Gentile who came up to Jesus. A non-Jewish man came up to Jesus. He said, Master, would you help my child? My child is terribly, terribly sick. Jesus said, where is your child? And this Roman centurion, this Gentile, said, Master, I'm a man who's in charge over a number of people. I have 100 soldiers who work for me. I say to one, come, and he comes. I say to another, go, and he goes. I know authority when I see it, and you, Jesus, have authority. If you will just speak the word, I believe my child will be well. And Jesus said, in all of Israel, I have never seen faith like this. Be on your way. Your child is whole again. You remember that outer court of the Gentiles? That baby doesn't exist any longer through the ministry of Jesus. Remember that day when Jesus was walking along and there was a big crowd of people who were pressed in around him, and there was a woman, a Gentile woman, with a flow of blood for many, many years. She was unwelcome in the temple for every reason. She was following along behind this crowd of people. She managed to reach in somehow and work her way through the crowd and touch the hem of his garment, and he stopped. He said, whoa, who touched me? And his disciples said, what do you mean, Lord, who touched you? All these people are pushing around you. Dozens of people have touched you. And he said, no. I felt power go forth from me, the power of healing go forth from me. I want to know who touched me. And they all pointed at this little woman, this Syrophoenician woman who had had a flow of blood for several years. And Jesus said, ma'am, your faith has made you well. Do you remember the day when Jesus walked into a colony of lepers? These are men of Israel, Jewish men who were not welcome in the temple because they were lepers. Do you remember that day? Jesus walked into their colony and he took one of their members' hands into his own and he pronounced the word of wholeness. Do you remember? Friends, do you think it's any wonder that on the day that Jesus entered into Jerusalem on Palm Sunday, the dispossessed people who were not really welcome were among those who were in the crowd that day who were throwing palm branches out in front of Jesus and in front of his donkey so that as he rode down into Jerusalem, they were announcing, Hosanna to him who comes in the name of the Lord. Is it any wonder that those folks announced him to be the king? And is it any wonder that the very next day when Jesus was in Jerusalem, the tables began to turn? Is it any wonder that the folks who were in charge of the institutional religion of their day took offense at him? Is it any wonder that by Monday, they were already meeting together in cloistered rooms to have conversations about what they were going to do with the troublemaker Jesus? And is it any wonder that by Friday, they have gathered together enough consent and enough energy that Jesus Christ was pushed to the cross and crucified between two sinners? But here's what Paul says. Again and again and again and again, Paul says to the Galatians, that cross was the grace of God poured out for you. And because of that cross and that resurrection, you are welcome. You don't have to clean up the outside of the cup first. You don't have to whitewash your tomb. You are welcome through Jesus. For 6 weeks, we've been listening to Paul say things like this. I'd like to propose that we do it for 60, or 6,000, or 60,000. How can we speak the message of the grace of God too clearly? How can we speak of the grace of God in Jesus too much? How could we possibly do that? The last two Wednesdays, I've had this privilege of going over to his place on last two Wednesdays for the last His Kids program of the year. For those of you who don't know, His Kids is an after-school program for children in our community, most of whom who don't come from our church. The huge majority don't come from our church, where they play and they learn and they laugh together. And for the last two Wednesdays, they've done the last program of the year, first for the younger elementary school students and the next week for the older elementary school students. And some weeks ago, somebody in the His Kids staff had an inspired idea. They said, what if on the last Wednesday of the year, we invite the parents to stay for dinner? We'll make dinner for them. We'll do a short program to let them know what their kids have been doing this year. And we'll just find our way of saying welcome. So the last two Wednesdays at 4:45, I made my way over to his place because I always show up whenever there's food present. And I just started working the tables. As parents were being seated with their kids, I just started working the tables And I'd say to the kids, so how long have you been in His Kids? And they'd tell me how many years they'd been in His Kids. And I'd say, how's it been? And without exception, they spoke about how much they loved this program and all the people that are putting it on for them. And then I'd turn to the parents when I had a chance. I'd say, thank you for letting your kids be part of His Kids this year. And the huge majority of the parents would say something like, oh my gosh, we couldn't keep him away. I mean, He loves his kids, or she loves his kids. We couldn't keep her away if we wanted to. Many of them would say, we are so grateful for this church and for his place and these volunteers who are making this happen week after week after week. And every once in a while I'd say, well, I want you to know I really appreciate you staying here for dinner tonight. And these parents would say, oh my gosh, I can't believe that you do this. I can't believe that you put on a dinner and you'd welcome us. We appreciate it. Thank you for your hospitality. And then there were a handful of times, two or three times, when somebody would say to me, you know, I've been looking for a church. Would I be welcome here? And I would say, I am absolutely, positively certain that you would be welcome here. I told them the times. I told them how to do this. And I said, I am absolutely, positively certain that you would be welcome here. And do you know why I can speak with such certainty? Because we have been welcomed by God. We have been welcomed by the grace of God in Jesus Christ. And those of us who are here, as long as we never forget that, anyone else who comes on the same way that we did will be welcome in this place. I think that there are three things that a person must be true of a person in order to belong to God's family. Three very, very simple things. They are, that person has entrusted themselves to the grace of God who has chosen them. God's forgiveness, God's fresh new start, God's grace, they entrust God who has chosen them. Secondly, They long to be transformed. They long to be made new. They long to be made like Christ. They know that they're not even close right now, but they long that they might grow through their lives to become like Jesus. And third, they long that God's healing be poured out not just to them, but to the whole world, and they want to be part of God's healing for the whole world. Friends, next Sunday morning, we're going to have more visitors here than we will any other Sunday of the year. Studies suggest that people are more open to an invitation to worship on Easter Sunday morning than any Sunday of the year. I hope that you will go out and spread that news as though every person who needs help is welcome in God's family, because you are welcomed too. And it just might be that in our gathering this morning, we have some people who need to embrace their welcome in God's family. Perhaps you are at a place in your life, at this time in your life, when you need this grace, when you need this forgiveness, and when you need to entrust yourself to God's love which is poured out for you. If that's you that I'm describing, if you need that new start, that fresh beginning, that gift of forgiveness, if you need to embrace your welcome by God and by God's people, I want to just invite you to come and kneel at this altar as we close here, as we sing in just a moment. I want to invite you to just come to this altar, and I or one of our elders would just love to come and pray with you. I'm going to ask our worship leaders if they would pray, if they would prepare to come forward at this time. Friends, would you bow your heads and your hearts with me, and let's pray together. Oh God, for the ways that you have turned the tables on our religion, which requires people to clean up their act first and become like whoever's in charge. For the ways that you have turned the tables and you have embraced and welcomed all who entrust themselves to your goodness, we thank you. Help us to never forget that that is who we are. Help us never to forget that we offer that sort of welcome by which we are welcomed. Help us to entrust ourselves to your grace, your transforming power, and your renewal at work in the world. In the name of Jesus, I pray. Amen. If God is leading you, I just invite you to come and pray at these altars as our worship team leads us now.